And good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of the Dennis Stuckey Show here on WPHM. We're here until 5 o'clock this afternoon. We will be interrupted tomorrow by Tiger Baseball. They have an afternoon game, but we'll be back on Friday from 3 to 5 as well. We start today's show with a nice treat. Doc Emmerich is on the line here at the airport getting ready to ship out to which series, Doc?
Washington and Pittsburgh, headed to Washington Reagan Airport this afternoon. And it's probably good that we don't try to do this after the Tiger game, because based on the run output the last couple of days, it would probably be 6:30 before the game's over.
32 runs in the last 2 days, and they don't have Cabrera, and they don't have J.D. Martinez. I don't know how they're doing it.
They've got great bats. As a Pittsburgh Pirate fan, I have one request. Can we borrow some?
Wow. Starling Marte. My goodness.
Yeah, I know. And totally thoughtless. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he disappeared for the World Baseball Classic and came back, and things were very untoward. But so now we adjust to that, and I think it may be a little too late, considering that we didn't defect like Houston did to the American League, and that doesn't mean the American League is weaker. It's just that right now we're in a division with St. Louis and Chicago, and that's not a very good thing to be if you want to make the playoffs.
Yeah, no. That's...
Speaking of which, I am very pleased that Mr. Soskin had another championship team in the Federal League. I only wish it had been the Prowlers again, but it was at least one of his holdings, and that undoubtedly will strengthen his position to continue holding on to Port Huron, we hope.
Yeah, and if I were a betting man, maybe I'd go with Winston-Salem next year, because it seems like every time he buys a team, they win a title.
So that's a new theme of his next year. Now, he doesn't have Dayton anymore?
He doesn't have Dayton anymore. Actually, do you know who owns Dayton, Doc? I know we're getting sidetracked, but the Prowlers coach, Joe Pace Sr., owns Dayton.
How about that?
And
I didn't know that.
He doesn't have a rink for that franchise to play in, but if he were to find one, there is that possibility that he would go off and run his club. But for the time being, he's coaching our team here in Port Huron.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I'm sure if Billy Water, Ray Germain, or any of the old-time Flags were listening, they would say he didn't have a rink to play in when Hera Arena was up and operating.
He would say that, too.
Yeah, he probably would. It was a sort of a dingy place, but they had good teams there during some of the years.
Yeah, very awkward with those benches inside the zones and everything. It was a strange place.
The
first round was strange for me on two counts. The first count that struck me as odd is half the series ended in five games or less, which I did not expect. But when I look at that, I also see 18 overtime games. So I know the games are still close, so there really weren't any series that were too lopsided, were there?
No, I guess if you had to pick out one that was not only lopsided but a shocker. I mean, even the 1-0 win that Nashville had over Chicago in the first game was, they shut it down so decisively on Chicago in the last 10 minutes of that game that the one looked like it was as good as three. And then the second game, they shut them down 5-0, and they created chances off their neutral zone. Forecheck, that they call it. I think about 22 years ago, there was a team that won a championship calling it a neutral zone trap. But now it's a neutral zone forecheck. And I think that's going to serve Nashville really well in this next round, but I'm getting ahead of ourselves. That was the one that shocked the hockey world, myself included, because we all thought Chicago was strong enough to get to the Stanley Cup final this year compared to the other teams that made it in the West. And, of course, as usual, we were wrong.
I certainly was. I had the Blackhawks going to the finals to play Pittsburgh. Now I'm not sure who I like in the West. I don't know that Edmonton is ready to go there, Doc, but boy, do I like the way those young kids play, and they're going to go up against a kind of older Anaheim team, and I thought the last couple of games of their series with the Sharks, the youth really won out over the age.
Yeah, I really like Edmonton's chances in the first game, because the Ducks have been off for a while. They are a big, imposing, physical team, and Edmonton will learn that very fast, but I think Edmonton's speed may pay off in this first game. But, you know, the Ducks haven't lost a regulation game in 45 days. 18 games. there were three of them that went to extra time and shootouts and overtime that they lost, but they won the other 15. They've had it going really well. Ryan Kesler, even though you can't perfectly control things in the first two games, you can do a pretty good job, as that veteran Randy Carlyle knows from having coached a Stanley Cup winner in Anaheim 10 years ago, that you can dictate some of the terms, and he'll have Kesler out there a lot against Connor McDavid. But I think it's interesting, too, that Patrick Maroon, an American kid that's 6'3 and 225, is going to be riding shotgun with Connor McDavid. And so Kesler may have to deal with him as well. But that'll be one of the interesting things about the start of this series tonight out west was can Anaheim deal with the speed factor with Edmonton? And Edmonton, as we often say at this time of year, with a team that has nothing to lose, is playing with that proverbial house money. So there's not a whole lot of pressure on them. They've won a series for the first time since 2006, and they've won back the hearts of a lot of people in Edmonton that were as skeptical as fans could be, unless you're thinking in terms of Detroit, skeptical as fans can be, and have now decided that these kids, this is paying off.
Well, you know, for years there in Edmonton, they kept drafting guys, and this was going to be the guy. Hall was going to be the guy. Eberle was going to be the guy. Nugent Hopkins was going to be the guy. McDavid is the guy, though. This was a can't miss, and he is the next superstar in the league.
He is 6'1", 195, and he can do everything that you ask for a centerman to do. He's a terrific interview. He's a leader. And those are all the things that qualify him to be an ambassador in the sport. Sidney Crosby's 29 now, and he is probably the current reigning ambassador in terms of being willing to do all the interviews every day, being a top elite player, and also being well-spoken and saying the right things and not causing a lot of controversy with comments that he might make, in the vein of what Wayne Gretzky did, what Bobby Orr did, what Gordie Howe did. Sid is in the same thing. I know people in Detroit hate him, but you have to grudgingly admit that he does things PR-wise, like donate tons of equipment to kids between 4 and 8 years old so they can learn the sport. He's been doing it for a lot of years. All those things that fans in Michigan don't want to hear, he's the guy right now, and Connor McDavid is going to be the next guy, not only in terms of playing skill, but also in terms of being the ambassador for the NHL.
Let's talk about Sidney Crosby's Penguins right now, because, Doc, is it premature to say Pittsburgh-Washington is the Stanley Cup Finals? They're the best two teams out there?
Yeah, number one and two in their division, in their conference, and in the league, and they are, and they've got tremendous power plays, and if you determine that games are swung, and I know this was something that Jeff Blashill talked about in the fall, and then, of course, his team just couldn't do it with special teams, but that 76% of the games are won by winning special teams battles. And the Red Wings, as you documented, almost every day to my ears at 6:35 in the morning, well, they failed on the power play again for another game in a row. But these guys can do it. They both do it really well. And will it come down to special teams? I don't know. I don't know whether these games are going to be such grudge, heavy-hitting affairs that there will be a parade to the penalty box, or whether, as we saw in the first round, the officials will tend to let the players decide it. That's an X factor in this series that we really don't know. But if you put a check mark next to defense and goaltending, it belongs to Washington. I think Nashville has the best four defensemen right now, if you take the core of four, because Carl Alsner is out of Washington's lineup, but Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, P.K. Subban, and Matthias Ekholm, for my money, are the four best core four defensemen that are remaining in the playoffs right now. Washington would be close behind, and if they get Alsner back, and of course it's mysterious, we don't know how long Carl's out for, maybe he'll show up and play tomorrow night, then Washington would have the best four in the league. But and then forward depth of position at forward, I give Pittsburgh the edge just because of the productivity of Malkin already in these playoffs, Malkin in the regular season. and the fact that even though Backstrom is a great playmaker, he plays alongside Ovechkin, whereas Malkin and Crosby are on different lines. And you look at the center matchup on this thing, you've got Malkin on one line, you got Crosby centering another, Nick Bonino, who actually clinched the series in overtime last year against Washington, as the third, and Matt Cullen, who's the best faceoff man on the fourth. Against Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Eller, and Jay Beagle, who's their best faceoff man on the fourth line. Depth of center is really good for both teams, but I like Pittsburgh's depth a little better and more scoring from the wings. So I give them the edge in that regard. And when it all comes down to it, people can say Pittsburgh in six or Washington in seven. In my mind, it's a flat-out pick. Take whoever you want.
Well, I think two keys. Pittsburgh's got to get their goaltending has to match Holtby. And Washington.
I don't think they can.
Yeah.
I don't think, even if Matt Murray comes back, I don't think they can match it raw skill and goal. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think for Washington, they need to get something from Kuznetsov. He's too good of a player not to produce.
You're right. Having him with Johansson is one thing, but Johansson has been the more productive guy. And, no, I agree with you. And that was his problem the whole first half of the season. Kuznetsov was empty. He had three goals the first half of the season. Second half, he kicked it out. But, you know, will this be another one of those lulls like he had early in the year? Don't know.
Is the Ranger-Ottawa series going to be a bunch of 1-0 games?
It might be. Yeah, it might be. Not only because it's not necessarily a lack of scoring, but it's how strong they are defensively. The thing that concerns me about Ottawa is that so much of their success, if they get any kind of offense generated, comes from the back end, and particularly Erik Karlsson. And in those last two games against Boston, and they were overtime games, and the next to last one was two overtimes. He wasn't able to play the way he wanted to. He only got in 3 minutes in the overtime in game five, the first overtime, and he was on the ice for the goal in the second one. And he was gutsing it out. He was trying to be out there. But they haven't had much of a rest. They had to play a lot of hockey. And the Rangers are cranked up, and they really feel it's their year. It's got to be, because there's some contracts up, and there are some guys that may not have a lot more years in them, so this has got to be their year, just like it has to be for Washington because of contracts being up. So that may be the inevitable conclusion in the Eastern Conference Final with those two. But when you have the championship and you have 9 playoff series, and the fans in Washington know this more than the players do, because only a handful of the players have been around for 2 of these, and most were there last year. You have 9 playoff series, and you've lost 8 of them. And in 3 of them, you were ahead 3-1, and you couldn't put it away. The fan population is going to take pretty deep breaths if there is a surge on the part of the visiting team.
And people think I'm hard on the Red Wings. Could you imagine if I worked in Washington, Doc? Hey, I
somehow or other imagine you with 2 sharp knives, one in each hand, scraping the blades against one another.
I don't know if you caught any of the broadcast yesterday, but we were talking about there's a movement to get Colleen Howe nominated into the Builders category for the Hall of Fame. And I was shocked that of the 102 people in that category, none are women. And because Marguerite Norris came to mind, and of course, I hope someday that Mrs. Ilitch will get considered for that as well. But
makes a lot of sense, you know. And you know, the world has changed an awful lot since the Hall of Fame was formed. And if you look at the names of the 18 men that are on the selection committee of the Hall of Fame, you see a lot of really solid guys with open minds. And for that reason, I don't think it's going to be that long before people like the ilk of you mentioned are going to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. There has been a great change over the period of time. I had a 15-year term there, and there was quite a change from year 1 to year 15 that I served on the selection committee. And in addition, you know, it incorporated the notion of having women players there. And there is nothing that says that a woman builder cannot be taken in. And I'm sure that that because of the openness of the members of that committee, particularly now, under Lanny McDonald and John Davidson, that is going to be considered. need to be nominated first. Just to clarify, there are only a few things about that process that I talk about, but you need to be nominated first by one of the 18 members. They will take public submissions, and if one of the 18 members agrees with the public submission, he can place that into official nomination. And then if the nominee gets 14 votes or more, that person is admitted into the Hall of Fame. That's how it works. And I would think that the body of work of both of the people that you mentioned that are so closely associated with the Red Wings will serve them in good stead in the future when that whole process goes about.
I will say this, the National Hockey League Hall of Fame, I think, does a better job getting its the people who deserve to be there in than Major League Baseball does.
Well, it's kind of sad by comparison sometimes, isn't it? But there was a study done and an article written in the Detroit News, I believe. Maybe it was the Free Press, one of the Detroit papers about 10 years ago. And the reporter did an investigation of all four halls of fame of the four North American professional sports. And they concluded that hockey was the fairest and also the most humane. And it is also the most secretive in that those who are nominated, unless they find out on the sly from somebody that was in the room and fail, do not know that that happened. The media do not know that you were nominated and you failed. And so it is done primarily to protect those that aren't successful and not have to have people coming and rushing after them saying, well, how does it feel that you were nominated and you were discussed and you didn't get in? That's just the way that the Hockey Hall of Fame has always done it. And I concurred with that when I considered one of my favorites, Bill Mazeroski. Every year they used to come to him and say, well, you didn't make it again. How's that feel? Well, what is he supposed to say? but that's the way baseball has always done it. And there are a large number of people that vote in baseball. And you have, not to discount the experience of various people, but in any group of, 200 or 300 people, you're going to have some that have a greater grasp of the wide history of baseball than others. And so there are upsides and downsides to each one, but I really like our process, and especially near the end of my term, I was very, very pleased with some of the people that were admitted into the Hall of Fame, and especially guys like Mark Howe. I thought, who had labored for years and performed at a high level for years, they didn't wind up winning the Norris Trophy. Why? Because Raymond Bourque was playing in the league at the time, and Dennis Potvin was playing in the league, and those guys won it all the time. But that didn't mean that they weren't Hall of Fame caliber defensemen, and Mark was one of many that I can now say that I was very happy to see get in.
Yeah, you know, you brought up something that made me think of my dad, Doc, because he would say that when we were a kid watching Hockey Night in Canada, and Montreal would be playing, and they'd have Robinson, Savard, and Lapointe on defense, and my dad would go, any one of those guys could win the Norris Trophy, but Bobby Orr's in the league.
That's right. Yeah, and what was it, 7 or 8 years in a row that he won it?
Yeah.
I think it was something like that. But that was part of what Mark, you know, suffered from for a number of years, was just because he happened to be born at the same time those guys were, and he also spent 7 years in the WHA from 72 to 79. So he was not, he was certainly eligible for the Hall of Fame when he retired from the NHL, but in counting up the number of years that he played, his total number of years, even though his performance at the WHA as a forward and later as defenseman were outstanding, the ruler that was used at the time, right or wrong, was probably different than it is today. And Mark stood up very well when he had his numbers from both leagues compared to a lot of others that came in. And not only a wonderful ambassador for the sport, but a highly skilled player that deserved to be there.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Doc, Bobby McKillop asked me every day, what's the word on the Olympics? What's the lashback? Because he really thinks this is going to turn into a war.
Well, I don't know that the players are very disappointed, and we at NBC are disappointed that we aren't going to see the best players, but we have said, you know, and continue to say, it is the league made the decision that they wanted to do it this way, and NBC will develop 23 new American stories. They'll have the women there, and we know that we will have the best 23 female players in the world because they represented themselves so well in Plymouth, and they are guaranteed to be to have the best players there for the next 4 years. But the men, it will be 23 guys tried and true, and the old people that like to see Aruzioni and the hardworking college guys are going to see an underdog U.S. team because the KHL is going to undoubtedly take time off. The Russians in the KHL and the other Europeans that play for franchises in their countries in the KHL will undoubtedly have the time off to get there. But the aftermath in terms of the relations between the players and the owners, and I certainly appreciate the owner's standpoint, because Pavel Datsyuk wasn't the same. Henrik Zetterberg had to have his medal handed to him once his Swedish team got back here because he was injured. And John Tavares never played again the rest of the season. So I understand their concerns, too. But disappointment, because we got used to having the best athletes possible in the world playing in the Olympics, and this time we won't have it.
All right. Doc, I got to take a break, so I got to let you go.
Okay.
Thanks for doing this.
Way to go, man. Thank you.
All right. There's Doc Emmerich from the airport on his way for the Pittsburgh-Washington series, which gets going tomorrow night. And we'll take a break, and we'll be back. We're just getting rolling here. It's the Dennis Stuckey Show on WPHM.